We're going to be in Genesis chapters 1 and 2 today. Genesis, I've always found really fascinating to study in a congregational setting because everybody knows it and we don't even realize how little we study it. It's those things that are most familiar, those things we learned early on, are the ones that we say, well, I've got that. And we don't come back around to it. I think another reason that Genesis can be overlooked, and in some ways tricky to study, is it doesn't fit really well into the way that we like our Bible classes and our sermons to work. We like the so what. We like to take a text and say, all right, now what do I need to do now? And Genesis doesn't always really allow for that. Especially here at the beginning. Because we like our texts to be like what we studied in class this morning. We were looking in Corinthians. We like Paul who says, you should be doing this. And then we can say, all right, now I know what I need to do. Genesis is not that type of book. And a lot of times when we come to the very beginning here, I'm stubborn, so I'm going to try this one more time. When we come to the very beginning, a lot of times all we can come up with is argument. When we look at Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, if we hear it in a class or from a pulpit, what we often hear is somebody making a case for reading it literally. We hear things like from the website Answers in Genesis or something like that, which talks about why this is literal history. And I'm not here this morning to get into that discussion. Because I don't think that is what the point that Genesis is trying to make is. Genesis wasn't written to be a history book. Wasn't written to be a law book. Genesis is about the beginning of the story. And I promise I'm giving up on that now. Genesis is telling us what we need to know about what really matters about where we came from. Genesis is telling us here at the beginning something that is very important. It's telling us about our God. The whole story that we're going through this year, the whole Bible, the whole Old Testament, all of Genesis, is about setting up this story about God and His people. I've suggested, I think I've done that from the pulpit here, that especially in the Old Testament, but the whole story as well, what it's trying to do is help us to answer the questions of who is God, who are the people of God, and what does it mean to be the people of God? Or maybe a better way of saying that is, what do the people of God do? And so at the very beginning here, this is a presentation of what God is about. And we get uncomfortable with just this introduction, and we want to know, what do we do with this? What do we teach somebody? What do we need to say? Are we trying? Do we need to argue about the Hebrew word for day and whether it can mean period of time or if it has to be 24 hours? We want those so whats. But if we really look at what it's doing, it's God saying, stop and listen. I'm trying to tell you something about myself. How many of us have been in a conversation where one person just wants the other to listen and understand something about, this is how I'm feeling, and this is something you need to know about me? And the other person says, what can I do about it? I'm going to fix it. What can I do? I'd imagine about half of us have been on one side of that conversation and about half of us have been on the other. Right, where we want to say, what can we do, and sometimes we just need to try to understand. And so, here at the beginning, I think we need to slow down and look at what the creation story tells us about God. The first thing that we see is God is in control. That may seem obvious, but we really like to be in control, so I think it's important to point out, nothing in creation happens outside of the will of God. I've heard it pointed out in many classes that if you really want to know what's important about creation, you only need four words. In the beginning, God. Everything else is details, it says. But what we should see is, in the beginning, God was already there. And if you go through chapter 1, anytime something is going to happen, that paragraph starts with, and God said. It cannot be missed that God is the one who makes anything happen. We are only in existence because God chose for us to be so. Which is kind of a comforting thought to think about. You know, some can ask, why are we here? Why did God decide to create? Well, we may not have the full answer to that, but what we can say is, whatever the reason, he did. If nothing happens outside the will of God, that means we are within the will of God. A very cool thing to think about. So not only is God in control, but in creation we see God is creative. Not just creator, but creative. Now, this comes to a part that has been another one of those things that starts fights. I said a lot of times if someone wants to talk about creation, it's picking a fight. And one of those fights that happens especially in the scholarly side of things, that spills over to church settings as well at times, is, if you look at chapter 1 and chapter 2, the Bible actually has two presentations of creation. You go through the very familiar, in the beginning, and the 7 days, and it actually goes into the first three verses of chapter 2. It says, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array, and the seventh day God rested. Creation is complete. And then in verse 4, this is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created. And it talks again about God creating everything. Now, this nature of the way this is set up has created battle lines. On one side, you have people who are saying, well, you have two tellings here. They seem to be written two different authors because they're telling it in two different ways. In one, every time it talks about the Creator, it calls this Creator God. And in the other, in chapter 2, it always says Yahweh. And so I said, so the entire schools of thought have developed over, in Genesis you have the Elohist for the word that means God, and you have the Yahwist. So there are these two writers doing things, and you get really carried away with these ideas. They point out that you know, things like in chapter 1, creation goes from wet to dry, where you have spirit over the waters, and God separates the waters, and God separates, you know, things, makes dry land come up. And in chapter 2, it goes dry to wet, because you know, it has introducing rivers and you know, breathing things into dust. And you get really carried away. The other side says, how dare you suggest that there are two stories here? That would be a contradiction, and the Bible doesn't do that. These are just two perspectives, that you have the big telling of the story, and then you have a zooming in to these things, and it turns into a fight over why there are these two tellings. You know, the first that says man was created after the animals, and the second that says man was created and then the animals after, and things like that. I want to set aside both of those perspectives, because I think both of those end up far too argumentative. I don't think the point that we're trying to get from here is about one author or two authors, and I don't think the point is about getting mad at somebody for suggesting that. Here's what we need to see. In both of these tellings, it shows us a God who has a plan. A God who is acting not just as creator, but creative. In the familiar chapter 2, creating humanity, taking dust or dirt or clay or different ways that different translations might have, shaping man, breathing life, taking rib, creating woman, very hands-on. Does anybody think that God had to do that? Or is this a God who can speak anything into existence? God could have created in any way. But we see a God who reaches down to create. And even in the telling in chapter 1, we see incredible creativity. It's the way it comes together. First, it's almost song-like, the way it's presented. I've mentioned a professor who used to be at Rochester before, David Fleer, and he suggested that if you look at Genesis chapter 1, he calls it a symphony. He says you have this underlying rhythm, and there was evening, and there was morning, and there was evening, and there was morning. You have the fanfare. It was good! It was good! And it points out the way that this is crafted very intentionally, where the way the wording shows this artistic, creative approach. And then you look and see the way these 6 days of creation are set up. How it's a parallel setup. The first 3 days are mirrored by the second 3 days, where you have light created on day one. And on day four, those lights are separated into the sun, moon, and stars. You have the separation of the waters to the sky and the seas in day two. And then day five, you get animals to fill each of those. Day three, you have the land that is created. And on day six, creatures to live on that land. This is a God that could have just said, earth. Could have just said, everything together now. I don't know if these are two separate tellings, or if it's the zoom in, or what. I don't know if this looked more like and God said and it happened, or if it looked more like God getting down in the dirt. I don't know what it looked like. But I know what it tells me about my God. It tells me that this world was not an accident. This was not like you hear about the inventions where somebody was working on something and set it on a stove over here and oh, that turned into something that I wasn't expecting. Well, that's pretty good. Let's go with that. That's not what we are. This tells us about our God, who is a creative creator with a plan, with a purpose for everything being made. And that's awfully special. Finally, this tells us that our God is collaborative. God doesn't like to work alone. Have you ever noticed that? Issues of free will aside, we have seen God is very capable of solving problems very quickly. As we read through the Old Testament story, we're going to see pretty incredible things where something needs to happen for God's people and God makes it happen. When we get to the New Testament, we're going to see even more amazing thing with the arrival of Jesus on the scene. And yet, God says, I want to work with my people. He created a garden and put the first humans in there. And it says God walked with them in the garden. Later, after the flood and the failing that led to that, God said to Abraham, I choose you and your people. And I want to work with you to reach the world. When that didn't quite work, we see the next step of the plan, where God says, I'm coming down there, not to destroy everything, but to set it right. And when Jesus shows up, he doesn't say, fixed. He says, I want you and you and you and you. He gathers 12 and said, we're going to change the world. And then he gets some others in on this. God does not seem to work alone. And even before any humans existed, even at the earliest time, at the beginning of all things, God doesn't speak in language that says, I'm working alone. We talked about this verse plenty on Wednesday night, and we didn't nail down any answers, but I think it's interesting to look at how this is presented. Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish and the sea and the birds and the sky and over the livestock and all the wild animals and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. There's a lot of ideas on what to make of that "let us" in our likeness, whether it's some kind of Trinitarian statement, some kind of pre-existence of Christ statement, or some sort of idea about a gathering of heavenly beings, or something like that. I don't know. But I do think it's interesting that even before any being is created, God still is not acting alone. And once they are created, we are created. It says we are in God's image. Again, there's a lot of ideas about what exactly that means. In my Pentateuch class that I taught last semester, we spent a 4-hour class session on this idea of the image of God. None of you have that time this morning, I'm guessing. But I gave them an article that laid out 11 different distinct ideas that people have come up with for what this means. And then the author suggested another one. A lot of ideas that are there. What we see is we are made with something about us that looks like our God. And that goes right along with how God wants to work with us. Because not long after that, we see this language being turned around and used in a slightly different way. In Genesis 5, it says, this is the written account of Adam's family line. So this is the beginning of that genealogy chapter. When God created mankind, he made them in the likeness of God. He created them male and female and blessed them. He named them mankind when they were created. But then look what it says in the next verse as this genealogy continues. When Adam had lived 130 years, he had a son in his own likeness, in his own image, and named him Seth. We see this idea of created in one's image. God says, I've done this for you, and you're going to do the same thing. We see this idea of God wanting to work with his people, wanting to collaborate. Now, one frequent answer to that question of why did God make humanity, I've heard many times that God wanted someone to glorify him. Have you heard that? That God created humans so that we can worship and glorify God. I understand where that's coming from, but I don't see that type of egotism, for lack of a better word, in Genesis. I don't see that in the story. I think if you think of what we see here in Genesis, God is in control, God is creative, God is collaborative. I think we could say that rather than God wanting to create people so they could glorify him, I think God created creation and created people so that he had somebody to bless. So he had somebody to do these incredible things with. Psalm 36 calls God the fountain of life. Think of that image. Life pours out of God. Uncontrollable. Just life. To not create is not compatible with God's nature. And I think of, well, this isn't something from the Bible, think of the song we sing about God is the fount of every blessing. These are the things that if you are touched by God, if you are around God, blessing pours out. How can you describe God's nature without talking about His desire for His people? A God who seeks after His creation is so central to this whole story. I don't know how you do it. God created because God desires that relationship. God desires a partner in that way. It's not an even partnership. We know that. We know God is in control. But the fact that that our God, the creator of the universe, seeks that with us is such a blessing. And that's where we begin the story. This story starts off by saying, you need to know something about our God. From there, it'll go and it introduces Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Seth, all these people that come through. That genealogy in chapter 5 leads up to Abraham and all this growing story. But Genesis says, before we talk about who God's people are, before we talk about what God's people do, we'll get there. You need to know that this is a story that begins with a God who is in control of all things, who did not create on a whim, and who continues to seek to creatively work in and with the lives of His people. And we're still in that story. And I am excited to see where our study goes. Next week, we're going to be in the Old Testament teachings column. We're going to try to make some sense of Ecclesiastes. Try not to come out of here too down on life coming out of that. I think we can do it. But I hope that, like Mike said, even if you're not in every class, take the time to do the reading. Rachel and I have talked this week that we've been finding the reading to not be that hard to do with it being broken up. I hope you're taking the time to study and talk about these things at home. Because there is so much here. And I pray that we are blessed this year as we go through this story. That's our time this morning. If we can do anything for you this morning, we had a long prayer list this morning. We love to pray for the people we care about. And that's everybody here. If you need prayers, please let us know. If you want your story to begin today, if you need to say, that's my God and I want in, we've got water here. We can make that happen. If there's anything we can do this morning for you, please let us know as we stand and sing.
I am resolved.